Welcome back to Tasteland. I am your co-host, Francis Zier.
Daisy Aliotto.
Daisy, who are we speaking with today?
Today, we're speaking with Rehan Anwar. He's a product marketing leader for Web3 products and communities, and he was the co-founder of FWB of FWB Fest fame. He also has his own fragrance business focusing on incense, but all sorts of fragrance. And he's a huge coffee connoisseur, all things we love talking about on this podcast, and we're excited to riff with him.
Classic things. I want to tell you about the TSA funding, government partial shutdown stuff going on right now. In New Orleans, particularly bad, the New Orleans airport, MSY, had the highest call-out rate for TSA in the country at 42.3%.
Oh, yeah.
I was in New Orleans this weekend for a bachelor party, my own. So my flight was at 4:40. I got there at noon. I'm pretty hungover, bachelor party the day before.
Right.
I'm in line for 3.5 hours before I make it through TSA.
No.
My flight gets delayed an hour. I make my connection in Houston on my way to LaGuardia. And we're getting close to New York. It's like, oh, nice. Almost home. Can get home around midnight. This is going to be great. And then the pilot's like,
yeah, so I'm getting news from the ground on LaGuardia that there's been an incursion on the runway.
A little while later, I feel the plane start going up. God damn it. He comes back on and he says,
yeah, we are being diverted to Baltimore. The airport is shutting down.
And so I turn on the Wi-Fi and I look it up and I see that an Air Canada plane has collided with a fire truck.
Oh my God.
Really sad.
So sad.
You know what I did? So what I did though, I'm like, oh, I want to get home. I got to get home. And so I'm just like, great. I'll just book a flight to JFK ASAP at 6 a.m. from the Baltimore airport. And I do it. Get there. Get out of security. And I realize I've booked it at the D.C. airport.
No.
So I call a car. It's almost an hour drive to the D.C. airport. Security opens at 4 a.m. Get through security again. I get on the flight. I get home finally at like 8:30 a.m. That's how I lost a day of my life.
This sounds like a fucking ordeal though, dude. Like.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Well, I can tell you some of those stories I've had an eye on from Clone. Mm. Did you see a semaphore that Vox Media tried to sell its podcasts and itself?
I did. I haven't read that though. I've only read the headline.
Seems it pulled themselves off the market.
Let's speak about it with our guest who has just arrived. Yo. What's up?
Hey.
Hey.
I'm really kind of jealous of the sound of birds chirping that I can hear.
Birds are chirping. It's gloomy outside. There are two dudes yelling at each other about, I think, a flavor of a nitrous tank.
Oh.
They just keep yelling watermelon sours at each other. It's 9 a.m.
Watermelon sugar. Hi.
Exactly.
Shout out.
And the name of that man was Harry Styles.
That's true. What is he doing outside my apartment?
He's training for a marathon, obviously.
Wait, so they're trying to do whippets together and they're disagreeing on the flavor?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it's just nitrous. Wait, didn't you and I go through a period of sending that Kanye screenshot back and forth of, can I have the nitrous, please? I actually did see you did a quote tweet about Kanye's rollout.
You dead naming him.
Yay, I'm sorry, Ye's album rollout.
You're not excused.
It was a quote tweet of a tweet by Miles Klee sharing a Reddit post. Somebody had posted in a subreddit for people who've like lost loved ones to QAnon about her, I think the poster was maybe a woman, black boyfriend, goes down the alt-right pipeline and then resurfaces a year later as a trans woman. And you thought that that was an interesting concept potentially for a Ye album rollout.
100%.
For reasons that could be obvious to our listeners or not, look into it.
Isn't he rewoking though?
I think he's walking back some of his more extreme statements, but I wouldn't call it a rewoking. I don't know. Rehan?
A rewoke.
I guess you would call it awakening.
Okay. I think it could be a rewoking. What I need is a full Kanye Danny Brown style arc where he's like, yeah, I'm putting out an album and the producers are me and a bunch of trans people. That's what I need, because trans people make the best music.
They really do. Rest in peace, Sophie.
From your words to Ye's ears.
Yeah, I mean, he's close. I mean, if you know, worked with Arca like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We'll see.
The Danny Brown renaissance has been interesting. I've never listened to his podcast, but quite frequently I see the clips. It seems good. I don't know.
He's so smart and so funny and so nice.
He was on Adam Friedland like a couple months ago, though, right?
Ooh, I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that was like a podcaster to podcaster situation.
Mm-hmm. big link up.
Yeah, I remember because the title, exactly 2 months ago, Danny Brown talks Diddy, BBWs, and 50 Cent. They really SEO maxed that one.
Yeah.
I feel like a fake fan for not knowing he had a podcast because I have my emotional support Danny Brown lyrics, like Octopus in a Straitjacket, which is one of my big moods.
Feeling like an octopus in a straitjacket?
I feel like an octopus in a straitjacket quite often, actually.
Real.
Rehan, so happy that you're coming on without an agenda, with nothing to promote, just an open heart and mind to the riff.
I'm here to promote one thing.
World peace.
No. No, the exact opposite. World chaos. I'm here to promote world chaos.
Mm.
And holding on to one's self-identity at the detriment of others.
Mm.
Is this what you were lifting about yesterday? Rehan tweeted that he got a tweet so upsetting that he had to go lift. And I was like, oh, I guess he doesn't really want to be on the podcast.
I saw that.
No, it was a text message. And then the immediate follow-up text message was, you can stop subtweeting.
Brutal. Caught in the act.
Why would you send that, Dizzy?
Wasn't me. I wish I had upset him that much.
Very few people have upset me that much. And also read my Twitter.
At least you got a pump out of it.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. You know, you're fasting for Ramadan. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, cool. I haven't worked out properly in like months. It's time. Let's go.
Mm. Well, wait, okay, wait. You were saying that you came on to promote, okay, I kind of forget exactly what you said. I'm going to paraphrase. You said hurting others to maintain your own sense of self-identity.
No.
Wait, what did you say?
Is that what you said? I think he said something.
I didn't say hurting others. I would never promote hurting other people.
Holding on to one's self-identity at the detriment of others.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow, Francis, I think you took the wrong message from the podcast already. We might have to start over.
We would never hurt others, Francis.
Okay, well.
We would only denigrate them ever so slightly and make it about ourselves.
So there's clearly something on your mind where you perform such a denigration in.
She's not going to share.
I might. We'll see. We'll get there.
Can you put it in incense terms? No, I told in the intro, we said you are a small business owner. And I think that's very cool. I don't know if you heard that VCs, they're really into IRL right now, except for putting their money behind it. So you have your own business, deep roots in LA, and Francis doesn't know anything about it. So except for what you've kind of have said online.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah. Unbeknownst to everyone who follows me on the internet, I've run a small fragrance studio out of downtown LA Skid Row for like 15 years. I do this for myself and to pay my rent. Still pays my rent, which is crazy. And I'm really good at it, I think, maybe. I can finally say 15 years in that I'm good at it, as opposed to last year when I was like, oh, I'm okay, I'm still learning.
What made the difference? Did Claude come up with a new flow for you?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Someone sent me an article about, oh, people are using AI to talk about wine to Psalms. And I was like, yeah, of course, people have been doing that with like Wine Spectator. That's cringe. It's fucking, yeah, this Wine Spectator score is really high. It's like, ugh.
Very cringe.
My Psalm friend was really upset about that. He posted three or four Instagram stories screenshotting it and just totally denigrating the author and the New York Times itself.
That's what Instagram stories is for.
I agree.
I think people should know less.
When you say people should know less, to me, it's like, okay, yeah, like people shouldn't know that much about wine. And then you should go to a bar or a restaurant and there should be somebody there who knows about the wine and they'll tell you what you should drink. And you, as a consumer, you shouldn't need to know that. Like you can be somebody who likes drinking wine, but you don't have to know too much about wine.
Right. It's a very gentle negotiation with yourself, right? Like when someone puts you on, there's that little period of like, all right, do I accept this? Is this actually something I like or not? That goes for anything, right? Fashion, music, whatever. Like, I think all of us have dealt with like a personal recommendation from like a family member or something where it's like, oh, okay, cool, sick. Like, you might really like this track or like, hey, you like this, you might like this. And sometimes you're like, don't rock with it. And sometimes it changes your life, but you have to allow it. And if you don't allow for that little gap because you filled it in with Wine Spectator or Shazam or some Condé Nast publication or X. If you're on VC Twitter, X, the everything app. Sorry, Elon. VCX. You fall prey to the tropes of like, oh, okay, like I need to talk about being legible to capital and da 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 da. Anyways.
This reminds me of a bumper sticker that you have on your car, but I'm hesitant to quote it directly because...
Let's see if you still got it.
Okay. Too based for San Francisco. Too... cringe.
No, too base for New York, too cringe for LA.
Okay.
I love that sticker. Shout out to Dylan Owsley.
Do you feel like, is this a confirmation or I guess availability bias, or has New York LA discourse been replaced by New York SF discourse?
I don't think LA people think about other cities, period.
Fair enough.
Because San Francisco is now the new LA, where everyone in SF is a transplant.
Mm.
It might have been Reggie James who was like, you know, SF has really interesting, like, you know, move to a big city energy now. And everyone is basically just trying to reframe their like small town experience in San Francisco, which kind of tracks for me. San Francisco feels very like quotidian Midwest energy in this really strange way.
Milwaukee.
Mm. I always thought I would move there. As somebody from a small town in Northern California, I like for the most of my life as a child, I thought I would move to San Francisco. And then by the time I was of such an age to do that, it was just totally, completely off the table. There was in no world was there any reason for me to move there.
Which small town?
I'm from Humboldt County.
Oh, shout out to Humboldt. Look, why would you move to SF from Humboldt?
Exactly.
The weed's more expensive.
That's true. Well, wait. So, okay, what we were just talking about the like people should know less taste thing. You haven't done that many interviews, but one that you've done is the Desire Paths with Daniel Giacopelli. Shout out, Daniel. You said something in there. Okay, I'm going to quote. I've legitimately had a $50 cup of coffee, and I understand why it was $50. I really want to start a coffee shop where you're like, this is phenomenal coffee. Here's 2 ounces of it. Daniel says, just a sip. There's a place in London called The Sampler that does that with wine. If you can get a teeny glass of a $500 bottle of wine or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And you said, I don't want to have 12 ounces of a Panamanian geisha coffee. It's like drinking really nice Riesling. You literally can't use your tongue after a while. Your taste buds will be maxed out. You never want that to happen. And that to me, like, that's kind of what we're talking about, where it's like, why do I know a little bit about wine, a little bit about different clothing brands, a little bit about books, like a little bit about music, a little bit about this, like the need as a consumer to be sommelier maxing, but like with like any given consumable, like that's what we're talking about.
It's because you're consuming other people's tastes more than you're actually having experiences.
Mm, yeah. It's that thing about is it Good Will Hunting or Robin Williams says to Matt Damon, like,
yeah,
you know the dimensions of the Sistine Chapel, but you don't know what it smells like in there.
Right.
I'm actually talking to Tyler Bainbridge of Perfectly Imperfect fame this afternoon, so I'll confront him about this. No, just kidding. I think Tyler would agree. You shouldn't consume other people's tastes more than you have experiences.
Nothing's cool anymore. Everything is on some spectrum.
I was there when cool people like cool things. I don't even hear the word cool anymore. Substack it.
Okay. Well, wait. So, okay, something concrete that we were talking about, Daisy, right before Ryan came on, was the Vox sale. I've been curious about that. I haven't had time to read it. I've not had time to read anything in the past week and a half. What happened with this Vox podcast sale that never happened?
Okay, I'll tell you right now, courtesy of Max Tanney. So bankers on behalf of Vox started approaching media companies and investors with a series of offers. They could take over the podcast business or potentially they could buy all of Vox. And the podcast option, it sounds like, had the most legs, but they said that Vox has appeared to change its mind. They said it was no longer for sale. Okay, I'm not going to like read through Max's take. I'm just going to tell you my take, which is like, I think there's no such thing as changing your mind once you start shopping around your company. There's only, I didn't get the offer I wanted, but Rayhan, you're nodding.
It's true.
Yeah. Also, like, I mean, in a different era, like, I guess The Ringer had layoffs yesterday, and The Ringer is part of Spotify now, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the podcast business. And so maybe Vox is just too late to capitalize on the moment that saw, like, Spotify buying The Ringer, because now it seems like they're contracting, and that they're playing in, like, a very similar pool from my perspective.
Wait, when you say contracting too, you mean like the company or like the podcast listenership?
No, I believe the podcast business is contracting.
Do you think that's because there are too many podcasts, case in point, that and now there's like less people, there's more people listening to podcasts, but they're listening to more podcasts?
Yeah, maybe that. I don't even know. I don't think it's necessarily that. Well, the video market, yes, has cut in, but it might not even be that another market has cut in. It might just be the economy is worse and it was never a great margin business to begin with.
I think that there was a period where there was like real ad dollars, there's real syndication, etc. behind podcasts, and now it's just fragmented and could be just like someone's passion project. I think like the Anchor Spotify deal probably repriced it for a lot of folks, where they were like, okay, cool, we're like losing some level of consolidation, some level of like market power.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet that, you know, for a lot of folks, they look at someone like, I don't know, Bezos buying like Washington Post and being like, maybe we should just buy more small to medium to large news outlets entirely instead of buying podcast networks or podcasts.
Although I wouldn't say that, at least at this moment in time, it doesn't really look like the Washington Post, like that really panned out well for Bezos or the Washington Post, since he's lost money on it. But like, who can say what he's won in political manipulation?
Right. Exactly. It's like, all, you know, people are buying megaphones for a very specific reason.
Yeah. And the new emerging megaphone is to go work in the media arm of A16Z, it would seem. Have they tried recruiting you yet?
Yeah, man. I'm proud to announce that I have joined the new media arm of A16Z. Now I just need to get that out of my system. Yeah, no.
Have they tried recruiting you, Daisy?
Hell no. Imagine dropping that on this podcast. No, they have not. I am the new media, so that's fine.
I've actually decided to create the old media arm of A16Z.
Is that just investing in profitable companies?
Wait, can you guys edit those?
Wait, yeah. If do you want that edited out?
No. I basically just want to say that part of it is using a bowling ball polish on Mark Andreessen's head. You can edit that part out.
It doesn't matter. You can't hurt his feelings. He won't introspect about it.
Wait, this reminds me. I was scrolling through your Twitter. I guess, are we cutting this? Are we cutting this part of the conversation?
No, you can keep it. I don't care.
Okay. I was scrolling your Twitter and I saw that you posted a picture of, I believe, a cop in Boston. It's quite clear the joke you were making because he had a very specific bald head shape.
Yeah, I know. It's really funny how sometimes pattern recognition works out that way. I'm sorry that you feel that way, Francis.
That cop could go on Joe Rogan, but Mark Andreessen could never go down that metal slide.
Could never ship up to Boston.
Not the slide. Classic. Yeah. I'm just imagining Mark Andreessen going down a slide now.
The cop slide specifically.
That was truly one of the great moments of the internet because everyone was just like, oh, this is easy. We'll just flip it. And people did the thing where like they reversed the video and the cop is going up. It's phenomenal.
Again, yes. In that interview with Daniel, you said that in the 90s, your parents were running kind of a nascent web 0.5 startup. What does that mean?
Okay. Do you want me to get nerdy with it or not?
I would love that.
All right. So basically my parents made me immune to all the Claude code hucksters out there because in the 90s, they were like, if you're a local business and you're in the yellow pages, we're going to make you a website. And it was a really sick FileMaker Pro automation that I learned when I was very young. It was very cool. And that was part of it. And they had full call centers just reaching out to people and being like, yeah, we made you a website. And like at that point, that was kind of new, interesting, and groundbreaking. So yeah, Web 0.5. This is like pre the SEOification of everything.
What were the URLs?
There's like,
you could grab a .com in those days, right? For cheap.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they had full deals with like Network Solutions and all these other like high level domain companies, and just like they bought domains in bulk. And that's how you made your money, because you made your money on margin there.
It's just me or is Daisy frozen?
Daisy's frozen.
Can you guys hear me?
Frozen Daisy sounds like something you'd get at a really nice bar. You get like two of them.
You get two, only two?
Probably only two, but yes, I hope that answered the question, Francis.
That did. That's very much. Sorry, we got very derailed. Look, I didn't know what Web 0.5 meant, to be honest with you.
Yeah, oh, that's fine. I'm someone who loves coining weird new terms that make no sense.
Mm. What's your latest coinage?
I don't have one. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's somewhere pathetic. It's on my Twitter somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I wrote Claudification the other day. Mm. I don't know if that's a good coinage.
Yeah, it's okay.
I've been using hashtag men's hobbies a lot to describe a bunch of things.
Mm, that's a good one. We can call men's hobbies a sort of de-incelification accelerant.
Kind of there, where it's just like, you know, there's a point in any given like niche or subgenre where like a kind of like really nerdy guy gets into it. It's like, no, I'm not just cooking. No, I'm like using a sous vide and like, you know, we're using 800 grams of whatever. You know,
I've got this $100 miso. It's $100 an ounce.
It's $100 an ounce. No, bro, you don't understand, bro. Like this, you know, it's like almost everything I've done professionally has had like a little tinge of this, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe in that interview I mentioned like working at Breville and like being the dude who like kind of made sous vide a thing, and like sous vide bros are kind of still annoyingly a thing. They can't cook.
I'm not a sous vide bro. I don't have one. But I did go to college in Portland where I was friends with people who I myself was an aspiring cook. And I had at least one friend who was a sous vide bro. But another term I found on your Twitter that you were, you know, coining a little bit. I guess you were stealing it from somebody else. You say GTM Boiler Room has been attempted by many a crypto startup, and almost every time it has failed. There are some exceptions, like a certain gathering in the mountains overlooking Palm Springs. But when you say GTM Boiler Room, do you just mean like a like DJ event as a go-to-market function for a company?
As someone who has spent God knows how many years in and around the music industry, someone who is probably a half-decent DJ, whatever, I don't want to talk about it. A, people should feel shame about what they're good at. B, yes, that, because you can't network with someone at the rave. Yeah. Whenever people try doing, like, you can't really hold a conversation at the rave, period. If it's done well, you should just either be blitzed out of your mind or you can't hear.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want someone's phone in my face. Like, a DJ doesn't like a phone in their face.
You don't want to do the phone-to-phone, let's exchange numbers thing? I always
love doing that, actually. I kind of love that.
I'm so
glad
I don't
love
that
because it's so weird.
Is it meant to be that literal, or is it more just like, hey, sign up for our product and you can come to the location?
No, I think he was that literal.
So what you say is, dinners can't be the only GTM move for enterprise teams. Invite prospects, try to shill your startup, get faded 99% of the time because most people are only there for free food. We need some moves. Why has nobody hosted a GTM boiler room yet? Actually, friend of the pod, Ariel Rubin, my ex-employer, Air, they hosted a GTM block party on Sunday. I wasn't here. I was going through airport hell.
A little while later, I feel the plane start going up. God damn it.
But that was an interesting one where they had a block party on Howard Street where their office is in Soho. They did have a DJ. This one does, but I don't think that was quite the point. But they were giving out free food, coffee, crosswords. They had their full page ad in the New York Times, which I have to say, I really respect Shane for putting his actual phone number in the ad. Having worked for this man, he's like, no, it has to be my actual, it doesn't work if it's not my actual phone number. I can imagine that conversation.
Do you have an update on that?
Dude, that's a horrible idea. But that's like, that's not the boiler room because, again,
I'm going to text
if the rave isn't right, you're going to text,
You're going to text the number? I'm going to text him later.
Yeah. Be like, yo.
But that's a little different. That's just an event. Yeah. That's just kind of a normal event. But the GTM, I mean, Boiler Room itself, they monetize through these partnerships now, right? And it didn't get sold. So Boiler Room itself is sort of a GTM Boiler Room.
Yeah. I mean, look, I will say this. I think that a lot of people's interface with club culture, especially tech bros interface with club culture, is through two very morally compromised doors, one being Boiler Room, the other one being Berghain. Maybe that's my hot take for here, which is anyone who's still worshipping at the altar of Berghain in 2026 is maybe old and washed, and maybe you should listen to more music and meet more people in general.
I agree. Unless you're worshipping at the altar of the Dirt Books titled Total Depravity by Jeffrey Mack.
Yes. Shout out to Dirt Books. I think that, how do I say this? The idea of, again, like a club being a business function is hard, difficult, and annoying. You're not going to close a deal because of that. Mm-hmm. The classic East Asian way of doing business is not the go-to-market. It's pushing a dinner so late until everyone has to drink multiple shots, and then you start talking about work. Because if you can hold your liquor, you can hold a deal.
Yeah, true.
It's the only reason I drink. You know, so like that makes sense to me, that part. I don't think doing it at a rave is a good idea. I think a block party is a good idea where people know what they're getting into.
You're supposed to talk at block parties.
You are, you know, and you can talk at a block party. Like, that's not a very, like, it's a social, A, it's a social place, and B, it's not particularly loud. Like, if someone is haranguing you while you have a hot dog in your hand or something, you're just like, fuck it, I'll talk to this person.
Yeah.
I think the Silicon Valley dinner party thing is really cynical. Unless you're really putting in effort to have a good dinner party, like, I've always seen it as something a fund will do if they don't have money to invest, but they need to seem like they're active. Because dinner for, you know, whatever, 10 people that are going to post about it is a lot cheaper than even like an angel check. Almost like a negative signal to me now, because it's like, you, that's all you have money to do. That's all you could think to do. And it sucks.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely sucks. I think so much of the go-to-market-y thing right now is like, okay, we're going to do something that's unique, fun, interesting. And I think at this point, like, the curated dinner has probably like jumped the shark in terms of being fun, interesting, whatever. Because again, all right, this is autistic mode right here. I'm going to go in.
That's what a podcast is, baby.
I don't like dinner parties.
You don't like dinner?
I don't like dinner parties.
What?
I don't like dinner parties.
I love dinner parties.
I don't like dinner parties for one very specific reason. I don't like long oval tables. If you're anywhere in the middle of that table, you are being overwhelmed with 8 different conversations and you can't talk to anyone.
Here's a classic coinage, Larry David's middling.
Yeah.
You would call that the middling section of the table?
Well, There's like a whole, it's a whole Curb Your Enthusiasm bit where they're talking about like, are you a good middler? Like you want to, when you're throwing a dinner party, you need people in the middle who are good middlers, who can kind of be the conduit for multiple conversations and connect different sides of the table and bring people in. It's kind of an exhausting thing. I would like to think of myself as a good middler, because you're a, even if you're not the host of the dinner, you're basically a proxy host. You're being asked to proxy host to dinner as the person in one of the middle seats.
Exactly. It's a responsibility, you know?
Yeah.
To quote Skepta, that's not me. I'm not that person.
Rayan, you're like, what people would know you for online is not necessarily, like you said, the small business. It's, you know, being a product marketer and leader in Web3. And
for the listener, he's dropping a lot of air quotes.
Rayhan is. Well, so, I mean, I don't really want to do like, what is the state of Web3? But I did see a really interesting tweet a bit ago. I can't remember if I brought it up on this podcast before, basically saying like the millennial optimism of era of Web3 and, to, you know, by extension, cryptocurrency is over. Meaning that like a lot of these like Web3 adjacent startups, I mean, FWB included, that seemed to have the most traction with people who actually understood and could make culture, like a lot of them have gone belly up or had to pivot in a way that like culture is now really back on the back seat. And primary like use cases for cryptocurrency that caught on are DeFi, decentralized finance, still has use cases. People who are trading cryptocurrency still has use cases coming from traditional finance institutions, and then grifts, and like, you know, with some exceptions. So there was this era of like millennial coded optimism of like, this could be a great way to distribute your art. This could be a great way to get a group of people to coordinate. This could be a great way to like sell fragments of your portfolio and let it appreciate. And all of that was like happening at the same time as like the cringier NFT stuff was happening. But it just didn't have, it didn't seem to have legs. And so the end of that era obviously portends the beginning of another one, but I just, you don't hear a lot of conversations about any sort of values other than like money, making money more accessible to people.
Right. I don't know. I think cryptocurrency has also fallen into the pile of hashtag guy hobbies in this way. The same way that like OpenClaw is also hashtag guy hobbies, right? Like, you're always going to have this tension of talking about what it does versus what it is. And I think a lot of people over-index on the what it does, and they talk about spec sheets more so than like, what does this actually allow you to do? You know, it's much more interesting if someone talks about crypto as, you know, stateless, censorship-free money movement in that way, and what that unlocks for so many people, as opposed to like, you know, JPEGs that are overvalued or whatever. Like all those things kind of work in tandem with each other. And I think it's very rare for someone to hit like a kind of gestalt talking point for that technology, the same way that people are, you know, as of this week, really grasping for straws and being like, how do we talk about agentic commerce? You know, it's like, this is going to change the world. And it's like, you know, give me 5 weeks, Stripe, hit me up. Like we can make sure Stripe's a winner and no one and everyone else gets shut out. It's not that hard, right? Like the same issue happens with any kind of incumbent versus startup tech, which is like, at which point do you wake the incumbent and the incumbent eats your lunch?
Yeah.
Right. When people, for example, talk about music NFTs, I was like, it just takes Spotify a week and a half and like, you know, half a sprint to say, all right, we're going to find a way to do micropayments in app. Right. Mm-hmm. And they did it for 3 weeks and then they killed it, which is very funny to me. So it happened. Yeah, same thing for, you know, if you look at the integration of crypto into Venmo, PayPal, et cetera, like all of these incumbent money movement apps have fulfilled the promise of crypto and they have, you know, really defined that promise. Mm. And the people who have tried on the margins are still doing it, but those are like experimental scenes, right? Like some of the on-chain art folks, art blocks, object, all that. That's kind of sick. It's super fun. It's really interesting. Is that the core? No, it's not. The same way that like, you know, someone building a synthesizer in their home is not the future of pop music.
It's guy hobbies.
Right. Right. Guy hobbies. You know, both can exist. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think a lot of people do take their energy, enthusiasm and over index on like, oh, I care about this, ergo a lot of people will. No, you care about it. And it's very fine that a lot of people won't, but it's cool that you care. You shouldn't stop. But like, don't proselytize so hard about it.
The guy hobby is sort of like a site of like doodling and potential innovation out of which can come scaled businesses and technologies. But the guy hobby itself is more of this eddy.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think guy hobbies are a very big load-bearing part of modern society. My one kind of weird interpersonal relationship thing is, ladies, if you find a guy with the guy hobby, just let him do it. It's probably really healthy that a guy has a guy hobby. You know, his little squad of friends that he can guy hobby it up with. Like, oh, bro, I'm going to this open claw meetup and we're going to talk about, you know, schedule tasks on Claude. Like, okay, sick. You know, go do
fantasy,
that.
Would healthy. You include fantasy sports in this category?
No, fantasy sports are not in that category because fantasy sports are a form of gambling and degeneracy.
What? Isn't that the original guy hobby? Guy hobby is
gambling
degeneracy?
And degeneracy?
Yeah, you guys love that.
No, degeneracy is the ultimate guy hobby. Like, if I want to go out with the boys and crush, like, 3 Soylents, 2 Insurers, and 5 Monster Energies and 3 shots of Fireball.
Shit.
Based
that's
on
a guy
story.
Hobby.
Based on true story.
Wait, we're talking about Dirt Books. We're talking about GTM Boiler Room. I don't know if we've ever talked about Stripe Press on this podcast, which is really interesting.
Shout out
to
Stripe Press. They actually do really good work. Shout out to Tammy. Shout out to all them. It's really interesting stuff for payments megalith to be like, we're doing books. And I think maybe all three of us are familiar with the pittance that, you know, large brands throw culture projects. Mm-hmm. It's fun to see one that works for more than a year and a half. Oh my gosh.
Stripe Press sold 1 million books.
Yeah, 1 million. That's crazy.
I think so.
And also the books are not that bad. And also they are so smart in differentiating themselves from like regular like airport drivel. I don't know who or when they were like, we're going to go up against, I don't know, like Bloomberg Press or like Harvard, but they have like nailed it. They've done a really good job at being just smart and interesting enough compared to those incumbents.
So as of February, Tamara Winter tweeted on X, I don't know what you call it now, on February 24th that Stripe Press had sold 1.1 million books.
It's really impressive.
It's a great website, by the way. I think it's...
It is.
Stripe.press. Let me see.
Devin, who works on the Stripe.press website, is one of my favorite follows. Absolute beast mode of a front-end developer. It's like, I'm a real big craft boy in this way. I love reading liner notes. I love reading source code. That is extremely my thing. And so whenever I see a new Devin website, I get excited.
Mm.
What would it take for you to leave X, Twitter?
Honestly,
a nuclear
I think
bat.
You know this, Daisy. I spend more time on iMessage than I do on X.
You are on iMessage
so,
a
like,
lot.
Yeah. X is a top of funnel for you to get iMessages.
I can't send people to laser react on other platforms. That's really what it is.
Nikita, if you're listening.
I'm texting him right now, by the way. He just sent me a laser.
If you're listening, my number is 626.
Hit him up.
Thank you so much for coming on Tasteland, and we'll see you guys next week.
Are we really ending it there?
God damn it.